Ö1 Kunstsonntag. Radiokunst, Kunstradio.
Herzlich willkommen im Hörspielstudio RB4 des Wiener Funkhauses, aus dem Sie in einigen Minuten die Live-Radio-Performance Silandia der österreichischen Komponistin Elisabeth Cimana erwartet. Elisabeth Cimana leitet IMA, Institut für Medienarchäologie, und wurde heuer mit dem Österreichischen Kunstpreis für Musik gewürdigt. Die Künstlerin hat bereits im Studio Platz genommen. Gemeinsam mit dem Tonmeister Fritz Trondl taucht sie live in eine Welt ein, die schon lange vor den Menschen existierte. Im April dieses Jahres hatte Elisabeth Cimana eine Residency an der New Zealand School of Music an der Victoria University in Wellington in Neuseeland. Von ihrem Aufenthalt hat die Künstlerin Natur- und Vogelaufnahmen mitgebracht. Andreas Maurer liest deutsche Texte über Silandia und dessen 500-jährige Vision. Das Maori-Märchen The Battle of the Birds in englischer Sprache aus dem Band Maori Tales of Long Ago, zusammengestellt von A.W. Reed, wird von Rosie Waits vorgetragen. Hören Sie nun live aus dem Wiener Funkhaus Silandia, eine prähumane Utopie von Elisabeth Cimana.
Silandia ist ein nicht anerkannter geologischer Kontinent, der großteils unter Wasser im Pazifischen Ozean liegt. Auch Neuseeland wird zu diesem Gebiet gezählt. 1995 wurde der Begriff Silandia zum ersten Mal von dem US-amerikanischen Geologen Bruce P. Lüdendijk von der University of California verwendet. Er versammelt unter diesem Begriff Neuseeland, die Unterwasserplateaus Chatham Rise und das Campbell Plateau sowie den Gebirgszug Lord Howe Rise, der sich mit Lord Howe Island auch über der Wasseroberfläche zeigt. Eine Gruppe von Wissenschaftlerinnen und Wissenschaftlern erstellte einen Argumentekatalog und forderte Anfang 2017, Silandia als eigenen Kontinent anzuerkennen. Silandia ist auch das erste umzäunte urbane Ökosystem der Welt. In 500 Jahren, so die Vision, sollen die Wald- und Süßwasserökosysteme des Wellington-Tals wieder ihrem prähumanen Zustand gleichen. Das 220 Hektar große Gebiet mit einem 8,6 Kilometer langen Zaun zum Schutz vor feindlichen Säugetieren umgeben, ist ein wegweisendes Naturschutzprojekt, das derzeit für 18 einheimische Arten, von denen einige seit über 100 Jahren nicht mehr auf dem neuseeländischen Festland zu finden waren, wieder einen Lebensraum schafft. Vor der Ankunft von Menschen, etwa vor 800 Jahren, war Aotearoa, Neuseeland, isoliert und es entwickelte sich ein weltweit einzigartiges Ökosystem mit einer Flora und Fauna ohne Säugetiere. Dieses Paradies wurde in den letzten 700 Jahren von den ankommenden Menschen und ihren eingeschleppten Säugetieren, etwa Ratten und Mäusen, fast zerstört. Die eingeführten Raubtiere dezimierten Neuseelands endemische Arten, die sich seit Millionen von Jahren entwickelt hatten, ohne sich je vor Säugetieren schützen zu müssen. Mindestens 51 Vogelarten, 3 Froscharten, 3 Echsenarten, eine Süßwasserfischart, eine Fledermausart, 4 Pflanzenarten und eine Reihe wirbelloser Arten waren ausgestorben. Vögel wie Tui, Kaka und Kereru, vor Zeelandia nur noch selten zu finden, bevölkern wieder die gesamte Region rund um Wellington. Andere gefährdete einheimische Arten wie Teeke, Hihi, Tuatara oder der flugunfähige kleine gefleckte Kiwi, ein leichtes Fressen für Hunde oder Katzen, sind im Naturschutzgebiet in Sicherheit. Sie hören heute unter anderem Teeke, Kaka, Takahe, Hihi, Kiwi, Pateke, Tui, Tutuwe, Kereru, Kawaupaka, Karuhirui, Popokotea, Korimaku, Kawautui, Kawaupu und Kakariki.
It happened a long, long time ago, when great Tane had thrown the Sky Father away from the earth and light came into the world. For long ages, Tane was busy. He clothed the sky with clouds and stars. He fixed the sun and the moon in their places. He put the red cloak of the sunset on his father's body. And on Mother Earth he spread a cloak of green, trees and bushes, grass and rushes, until she looked more beautiful than the sky itself. And then, when it was all finished, he made birds with swiftly beating wings, birds which sang and danced all day long, birds to spread the seeds of the trees so that the forest would never die. So it was that the Earth Mother's beautiful clothes were alive, and so it is that the garment covers her to this day. when the birds were made, they did not know where to go or what to eat, and Tane had to show them how to fill their hungry little stomachs. He clapped his hands, and when they came to him, he showed them all the trees of the forest which had fruit and berries. There were the berries of the konini, puriri, mati, miro, kahikatea, mare, hinau, karaka, oh, and 100 others. He showed them the ribbonwood and the kowai and many others. There were leaves which were good to eat too. These are all good to eat, Tane said to the pigeon. To Kakariki, the parakeet, he said, you can eat berries and seeds as well, flax seeds, toto seeds. To Kiwi with its long bill, he said, there is good food for you in the ground, worms and snails as well as berries. To the fantail as it twisted and turned in the air and fluttered its big fan. You may eat the insects as they fly in the air. To the tomtits, he said, insects and grubs for you, my little ones, because you can see them with those sharp eyes of yours. There were other birds which he took down to the seashore and showed them where they could find plenty to eat. Crabs for the herons, insects and tiny shellfish for the stilts, fish and crabs for the penguins, scraps and fish of every kind for the gulls. There is the sea for you, he said to the petrels, the mutton birds, the albatrosses, the skuas, the mollymawks and the gannets. It is full of fish so that you never need go hungry. Then he left them and went on with his work, and for a long time the birds were happy as they fed on the food that Tane had given them and learned how to build nests for themselves and care for their chicks. Insects and berries and leaves, honey and grubs, fish and crabs and snails, and every kind of seafood and forest food was theirs for the taking. Each bird knew its home and its time for going out and coming in, its song to sing and its... One day, Kawau, the boasting river cormorant, visited Kawau, his cousin, the sea cormorant. He was surprised to see how far the ocean stretched towards the sunset and the wide spaces in which to fly. "Which sort of fish do you catch in the great waters?" he asked. His cousin threw him a fish. "Try that," he said. Kawau stretched out his long neck and caught the fish in his beak. He swallowed it whole in one gulp. But the fish had prickly spines which caught in his throat. Kawau cried out with pain. "That is no good," he said scornfully. "You must come to my home and we will hunt the fat river eels together." Months went by, and one day the sea cormorant paid a visit to his cousin. He left his home and flew up the river with slowly beating wings until he heard a cry of welcome. "It is you at last, sea cousin," the river cormorant cried. "Come down here and see my home." The sea cormorant fluttered downwards and perched beside his cousin on the branch of a tree which stretched across a deep pool in the river which lay in the shadow of the bush. Above their heads the leaves danced in the bright sunshine, but down below the water was black because the trees leaned over it. "It is cold here," said the sea cormorant. The river cormorant laughed harshly. "There is better fishing in this river than on all the beaches from here to the place where the spirits begin their long journey to the other world," he said. "Look, cousin, when your eyes are used to the darkness, you will see two darker shadows in the pool." The sea cormorant bent his head and tried to look into the dark water. At first he could see nothing, but presently the water seemed to get clearer, and sure enough there were two long, thin shapes swimming lazily close to the bank. "What are they?" he asked. "They are eels," was the reply. "Beautiful, fat eels, such as you never see in the windswept waters of your home. I will take the one over there, and you can have the one below us. We must not scare them away, so we will dive together." "Be careful, cousin." They waited quietly while the eels swam slowly through the water. "Now," croaked the river cormorant, and just as if they were one, the two birds plunged headfirst into the pool. The eels flashed away into the shelter of their home under the bank, but they were too late. The strong beaks closed over their necks, and a moment later they were lifted high into the air, as the cormorants flew back to their perch. The eels struggled with all their might, but the river cormorant threw back his head and the long fish slipped down his throat. The sea cormorant did the same. He looked at his cousin. "That was wonderful," he said. "No spines, no scales, nothing but good fish. Cousin, I think I will come and live with you, for your food is much better than mine." Then the river cormorant was sorry that he had boasted of his rich river food. "This is not your home," he said quickly. "You would not be happy here." "I think I would," said the sea cormorant. "There is plenty of food for both of us." "You are like all the seabirds. You have no manners. Get away back to the sea," the river cormorant said angrily. He flew at his cousin and drove him away. The sea cormorant did not stay to argue. He flew as fast as he could away from his cousin. When he got back to the beach, he stood on a high rock and called loudly, "Come and listen to what I have to say. I have something important to tell you." The great albatrosses came floating in from the sea. The oyster catchers and the gulls and the terns gathered round him until, as far as one could see, the water was covered with floating birds. "Listen," he shouted. "I have been far inland to visit my cousin, the river cormorant, and a wonderful thing happened. In the river, where the water is fresh, there are wonderful fish which my cousin calls eels. They are good to eat. They are long and fat and have hardly any bones. When you eat them, they slip easily down your throat." "And what has that got to do with us?" a great albatross said. "I'll tell you what it has to do with us," the cormorant said. "Why should we have sore throats because the sea fish are hard to eat? It isn't fair. All we have to do is fly inland together and drive all the forest birds away, and then we can live on lovely, fat, juicy eels. They can come down to the sea and find out what it is like to be a seabird."
It seems a silly idea, grumbled the old albatross. But perhaps it could be a nice change. Come on. And his great, strong wings began to beat, and the other birds made way for him. Faster, faster he went, until a wave came in and lifted him up so that he flew above the water. Up and up he went in huge circles, and the other birds followed him until the sky seemed full of their beating wings. When they were all in the air, they turned and began to fly up the river. Far away, above the peaceful pool in the river cormorant was telling his friends about his cousin's visit. You were foolish to be so boastful, said a fierce kingfisher. Why did you say anything? Yes, I can see I was foolish, said Kawao, but that is in the past, and we cannot live the past again. What we have to think about is the future. I am afraid that my cousin will come back and bring his friends with him. We must be ready for them. Just then, Pitoitoi, the robin, fluttered down, crying, They're coming! I can hear them already! The sound of their wings is like the thunder of waves on the beach. Kawao danced on his perch with excitement. Who'll be the scout? He shouted. He'll see when they are coming. I'll be the scout, said Kokoa the cuckoo. I'll see when they are coming. He flew up above the trees, and presently he called out his warning. Coo-wee! The waiting birds heard his cry, and then far away, another call. Aha! As Karoro the gull called out a challenge. Who'll answer the battle cry? Asked Kawao. I, said Fantail. I'll flaunt a challenge with my fan. Who'll sing the battle song? Asked Kawao. I, said Tui. Let Honji the crow, and Tira Eke the saddleback, and Farauro the short-tailed cuckoo, and Keruru the pigeon help me, and I'll lead the battle song. When the song was ended, Kawao faced the angry birds. Who'll begin the fight? He cried. I'll begin the fight, shouted Ruru the owl. With my beak and claws, I'll begin the fight. He rose from his perch and swooped down on the seabirds, with the land birds flying in a great crowd behind him. It was a long and fierce battle, when feathers fell like snowflakes and the sun rose high in the heavens. At first, the seabirds attacked in their thousands, but after a while they grew frightened. The land birds fought more fiercely until the seabirds were driven back. They turned tail and flew back to their homes in terror. Ki-ki-ki-ki-ki-ki-ki, laughed Pereira the duck as the gulls flew down the river like a cloud in the wind. And so the battle ended, said Popo. That is why the seabirds do not eat the land birds' food. And so there is peace between them in this lovely world that Tane made for us long, long ago. Thank you. And so the battle ended, said Popo. That is why the seabirds do not eat the land birds' food. And so there is peace between them in this lovely world that Tane made for us long, long ago.
Silandia, eine prähumane Utopie von Elisabeth Shimana. Die Komponistin und Radiokünstlerin performte heute Abend live im Studio RP4 des Wiener Funkhauses. Tontechnik Fritz Trondl. Rosie Waits las das Maori-Märchen The Battle of the Birds aus dem Band Maori Tales of Long Ago. Andreas Maurer las die deutschen Texte. Die heutige Live-Radio-Performance von Elisabeth Shimana sowie alle Sendungen des heutigen Ö1 Kunstsonntags können Sie noch 7 Tage lang auf ue1.orf.at nachhören. Im Namen des Teams für Radiokunst Kunstradio und für den Ö1 Kunstsonntag verabschiedet sich Elisabeth Zimmermann und wünscht weiterhin eine gute Nacht mit Ö1.